market, you buy olive oil, you put it into your deep fryer. No, we have to have in the factory rabbis verifying that the tanker where the oil is coming in had a kosher product beforehand. And if it didn't have a kosher product beforehand, was there a wash that was done before the kosher oil went in it? So now we're assuming the kosher oil is in the truck. The rabbi certifies the truck with the wash and he goes into the factory. The potato chips are deep fried in the oil. But it's deep fried, it's cooked. How's the non-Jewish person allowed to do that to you and have a certification? The answer is because potato chips are not fit to be served at a king's table. And that's only one example of a factory that we certified. Since it's not fit to be served on a king's table, it's a snack item. You won't invite somebody to your house in a fancy meal for potato chips. That's why there's no issue of Bishul Akum. And if, therefore, if you buy a bag of potato chips and you say, wait, there's a certification on here, how did it become kosher? The non-Jewish person cooking for you, that is how it's done, because we hold that potato chips do not require the Bishul Yisrael, which means a Jewish person cooking for you. And I guarantee you there's no Jewish rabbi lighting the fire and putting the oven on at a potato chip factory. And these things are what we deal with on a regular basis to understand if this company is actually going to be certified. How do we certify the company? What ingredients go into it? I've been to facilities, the flavor companies, that have about 10,000 to 12,000 ingredients in the factory. They have little jugs of flavors. They have little bit of jugs of this kind of flavor, that kind of flavor, because it's very, very important to make sure that they want you to taste whatever they're trying to make, they add it into that product. But it's not real ingredients. It's more like artificial chemicals and other kinds of things to make it taste like the real thing. So if we're making a product kosher certified, we have to make sure that all those ingredients as well are coming from kosher sources. So potato chips are very easy because it's potatoes and some salt, olive oil, and you're done. But as far as the business development, as far as companies becoming kosher certified, and as far as the consumer going into the supermarket and saying, hey, how is this chips kosher certified? Does it have to be certified altogether? Obviously, you're buying a product that you have to look out for the kosher symbols on your products before you're buying it. But you know a little bit of what goes into a product now with as far as potato chips, because of the fact that so many different variables that go into actually the manufacturing. So it's not just, you know, you certify a product and that's it. The rabbi has to look into it. And a lot of times these products also have flavors that we spoke about, and there's sub-ingredients in there. So we have to go to the factory and make sure that those 50 ingredients that give you your barbecue potato chips are certified as well. You can imagine your mother at home, you have some spices and things like that to make your products. These are talking about many, many other ingredients that go into the product beforehand. So right away off the bat, you go into a supermarket, you have to look for products, you have to look for ingredients and make sure that those ingredients are with products that have kosher certification on it, because also you don't realize that when we go into factories, they don't have to list certain things on the ingredient label. They don't have to list certain enhancers, certain products that you're dealing with that are touching the product. You don't necessarily have to deal with that as well. And for a kosher standpoint, you have to make sure that all the ingredients are certified. It's not like days before where you just read the label and that was it. Nowadays, a lot of things evolve. Companies got bigger and much larger, so you always have to look for a kosher symbol on there. Now, we mentioned there's 1,400 kosher agencies out there. Anybody know what the K symbol stands for? K? Kosher. But the question is, who put that K on the product? Anybody know who put the K on there? It's a trick question, because if the product is sold in certain states, anybody could decide, oh, the K symbol is on the product, it stands for kosher, we could put it on there. But if you go into one of the states, I know it's in New York or California, it depends on which state, I'm not sure what the law is in Florida, but you go into the K symbol, it has to be backed up by what we said before, one of the 1,400 kosher symbols out there. But who is behind this K symbol? Who certifies this product? It's very possible that there's a very weak certification on the product. I've been to companies where I tried to get them certified kosher, and they have maybe a weaker certification, and they said the rabbi has not been here in many years. So can you imagine that if I'm going to a company to get them certified and there's a K symbol on the product? K is just an example of products that have to have a red flag when you see that, and you would have to buy a product with hashgacha, because who said that the K symbol would be reliable on a product where it's manufactured in different areas? Who is behind the K symbol? So you have to ask yourself when you're going into these stores and buying products, who is behind the certain symbols that you buy? Just because it has a symbol on the product does not mean that you're able to purchase the products. So now let's go to a few questions which come up on a regular basis. A lot of things that you hear today you won't hear anywhere else, because just the nature of what happened over the last 13, 14 years, I've been speaking in many places and many people have questions. Young boys like yourself, they have different questions that come up on a regular basis. So we'll talk about some of those questions. We'll also discuss some of the questions that came up through the email. And then we have time after, we'll take questions on anything that we did not discuss, and perhaps things that we did discuss that weren't clear. We just want to have different angles of the question. So the first question which comes up a lot is, are you able to go into a place that is on a rest stop or a place that's not certified and go walk in there to begin with? What would be the problem of walking into a place like that, like a non-kosher establishment?
Marasayan.
So what is Marasayan? Anybody know what Marasayan is? That's great. So Marasayan means that you're doing something which people may have an impression that it's not permitted. For example, Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal has a responsa, has a tshuva about going into a car within 18 minutes of candlelighting. Why? Because we know that within 18 minutes of candlelighting, the man on Shabbos, Erev Shabbos, he's allowed to go into the car. But people would think that, you know, Rav Moshe Feinstein is going into a car within, after his wife lit the candles, there was a Marasayan issue. There's Marasayan in Hilchos Shabbos where you're hanging like wet laundry out. People think maybe you did it on Shabbos. But Marasayan is very unique in regards to kashrus. Okay? Because Marasayan is brought down in Yerodea in Siman Pei Zayin. And there the rabbis have a whole discussion about cooking milk and meat together. Anybody know that why you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together? Right, Chazal say you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together. There's a matter of the Vuchim and the Rambam and different things that discuss the topic, but why is it that you're not allowed to cook milk and meat together? Chazal didn't give a reason. So it's really a trick question, okay? But my rabbi that I dealt with, Rabelski Zatzal, for many years, realized, and I asked him, I deal with a lot of non-Jews, and I'm trying to explain to them, they can't believe that I can't eat a cheeseburger. They can't understand it, that we can't mix milk and meat together. And the way to explain this, once you understand, basically, even though it's a chayik, we don't necessarily know the reason, but if you understand this reason, then you'll know why not to cook milk and meat together. Milk, if you know, is life. You drink milk, and that keeps you alive. Meat is death. In order for you to have the animal, it has to be killed, and then you have meat. And because that's death, and milk is life, we don't want to mix life and death together. We keep it separate. And that's why the rabbis say 6 hours, and you have to wait until you have milk after you eat meat, because we don't want to mix it together. The body digests the system, the meat, and therefore you'll have your milk product after the fact because you want to keep it separate. So now, if you want to cook milk and meat together, you can't do that. You can't have enjoyment from it and the other halakhas as well. But what about doing a dish which doesn't have real milk? It has parva milk. Now you have a lot of parva milk. You have margarine. You have parva ice cream. You have other kinds of parva ingredients like tofu and different things, and now you want to use that. The rabbis say you could do that as long as you put the container on the table, indicating that it's not real milk, it's parva milk, and therefore you're able to do it. But if the truth is, if you go to a restaurant or you go to a place that's serving meat and now you want to have parva dessert, have you ever seen a container on the table that says parva ice cream? No, because it was years ago when parva came out and you have all these soy burgers and soy chicken and all these soy products that are not real. In that case, people weren't familiar with it, so that's why they had to put the label on the table. But nowadays, that's so common, there's no reason to have it on the table. Everyone knows that it exists. Everyone knows that there's, for example, in our case, there's rest stops that people go to, and there's restrooms that you can go into the rest stop, and there's also water that you can buy that does not have to have hashgacha. You can buy a lot of things there that are non-issues, and people won't be concerned that you're walking in there for something that's not certified kosher. So as far as going into the rest stop, there's no Marasayan. As far as buying the coffee, there's no issue of buying the coffee. We spoke about Bishul Akum. Why isn't it the issue of Bishul Akum with coffee? Because Tosfos says that coffee is mostly water. So there's no issue of a non-Jewish person cooking for you with that product because it's mostly water. We spoke about before, Bishul Akum, it's water, it's not a problem. And since coffee is Roiv Mayim, mostly water, you could buy a coffee that does not have an issue of Bishul Akum. What about kashrus? So again, unflavored coffee is something in the industry which does not have to have a hashgacha because it's just coffee, it ground up, and then there's water obviously added to it, whether it's instant, and therefore you'll be able to buy unflavored coffee at a rest stop. There's no Marasayan, there's no Bishul Akum. That's only regular coffee. What about flavored coffee? So again, we go back and have a conversation about flavors. Flavors is always a red flag. I guarantee you, if you take your bottle of product that says made from certain ingredients and all natural, it's natural chemicals, okay? And like I was speaking before, the first time that I walked into a large soda manufacturer was the last time that I drank soda. So it's been like 14 years since I drank soda. It's not something, my kids drink it. My kids drink it, they can drink soda. When they're older, they can decide not to drink it. They want to go to a Slurpees and buy a 7-Eleven Slurpee, they can do that as well. I personally have a lot of things that I've sort of got off my list. And once it's off my list, there's no going back. There's no turning around. So it's a good thing to have in general in Yiddishkeit. You know, there's certain things that you used to do, you say, no, I'm not doing it anymore, and that's it, you're done. It's off the list, and there's no desire to go back to it. It takes work, but you get to it.
Because of kashrus or because of how they make it?
Oh, no, not because of kashrus. It happens to be Pepsi is one of my facilities. It's only because of health reasons. Yeah, yeah. I mean, also because you are what you eat, really, you know, and you take all these things into your system, it does have some sort of an effect on you, and you can guarantee that. So either way, so you're going into your rest stop, you're buying unflavored coffee, you want to buy a soda, okay? You want to buy certain things that may or may not have the hashgacha. So soda is very unique, because the way they make soda is that they go into a facility, and the syrup comes from a company that's certified, and then they mix the syrup into a kettle, and that kettle gets mixed into, what do you think they add into the kettle besides the actual mix?
Water,
very good. And what else do they add into the soda? They get tankers and tankers of sugar. And then when the tankers of sugar are finished, then there's another tanker waiting in the lot to add more. Okay, and then you wonder why everybody's hyper when they drink all this stuff, right? Because there's tremendous amount of ingredients in there that makes you guys and other people who drink soda, you know, very, very hyper. That being said, what about the kashrus of it? Forget about the health, for example. Now you're not ready to stop drinking soda. So you go to your Pepsi product, you go to the store, it doesn't have hashgacha on it, doesn't need hashgacha. So Pepsi is certified by the Chafke. We certify a lot of Pepsi manufacturing facilities in the East Coast. And you'll have a Chafke on some Pepsi products. And then as you go away from New York, New Jersey area, out of town, even if you're traveling, you will not find a hashgacha on a soda. But the thing is, it'll have a small K on it. K, we said, does not mean anything. K is just generically kosher. But because we know the ingredients that go into the product, we know the ingredients that go into the Pepsi products, you will not have an issue of buying a Pepsi product as long as it says made under the Pepsi bottling authority, because we know the ingredients that go in there. Some people ask the million-dollar question, you know all the ingredients that go in there. What about the secret ingredient of Pepsi or the secret ingredient of that factory? I don't care about secret ingredients because I know that the mix is kosher certified because it's coming in with a hashgacha on it. And it doesn't bother me the percentage of the actual product, because if it's 10% of this, 5% of that, it doesn't make a difference for us, because we know that the syrup coming in is kosher, and therefore the product is going to be kosher certified. There's two exceptions. One is Hawaiian Punch, because Hawaiian Punch is more like a product that you have in a juice company, and it's made in a pasteurizer, which we can't get into now, but it's basically an oven that heats the product very hot. And then also Welch's grape juice, because Welch's and other grape juice products can have grape juice in it, and it could be Yayin Nesach, which means a non-Jewish person has a handle in the grape manufacturing and the grape process. And if it doesn't have an hashgacha on it, you would not be able to purchase a product such as Welch's without a hashgacha. Yes?
What about Fanta in general? Fanta.
Okay, so it's a great question. So the way it works with Pepsi and other products, that if the syrup is kosher, when you're going into a fountain soda, like you're going to a store or any sort of rest stop or convenience store, and they have a fountain machine, they're not adding anything actually to the mix to make it non-kosher. So whatever they're doing in the machine is not going to have any effect on the kosher status. If you know Sprite is kosher or a different flavor of soda is kosher, so even if it's in the fountain soda, not in the bottle, that would also be good. Now, one of the questions which came up is, what about new flavors? There's a tremendous amount of flavors that are on the market that are not kosher certified, because again, every flavor that you buy in your store has 30 to 40 sub-ingredients in it. So if you're buying a cherry flavor, without mentioning names, you're buying a cherry flavor, there's no real cherries in there. There's 50 chemicals in the cherries to make it taste like cherries, or else your bottle of soda will be $15. Like you said, I haven't drank soda in 15 years, so I don't know the price of it now, but I'm assuming that it's pretty expensive. And therefore, if you use the real cherries, then it's going to be much more expensive. They're only going to be using chemicals, natural chemicals, as they call it, and therefore companies are very, very slow in coming and making new flavors kosher. So if you see a product that's kosher for one point, now you want to know if that same manufacturer has a new flavor that's kosher. Many times they'll take months to get that product to be certified because of the fact that they have to get all those sub-ingredients and chemicals to be certified, and sometimes it's not very easy to do that.
You can't assume anything
because, again, the company worked very hard to get that specific flavor kosher. That doesn't mean that all the different varieties of Mountain Dew and Crush and all these different things are all going to be kosher, because, again, it's not just water and some 3-4 ingredients. It's a very complicated process in order to make that work. Now, by the raise of hands, how many of you have drank a Slurpee in your life? Oh, wow. So it looks like the minig in the yeshiva is to drink a Slurpee. Okay, my son also has a drink Slurpee. My children drink Slurpee. I personally have not had a Slurpee in guess how many years?
14.
No, not 14. Probably 20.
20.
20 years. I haven't had donuts also in about 15 years. Yeah, yeah. It's a big, not such a big deal for me. It might be a big deal for everybody else, but I'm not so, I eat what I have to eat, you know what I'm saying? I don't have any desires for Krispy Kreme and all these other donuts and things like that. But either way, we'll talk about it maybe a little later. But when you're dealing with Slurpees, now why is it kosher, and why haven't you asked the question to yourselves when you walk into the 7-Eleven, how I'm able to even go in there and buy the Slurpee. It's a non-kosher store. Don't get scared. I'm not going to tell you at the end of the day it's not good. I'm just trying to get you guys to open your minds a little bit and think. Like, you're going to a non-kosher store. You're buying from a non-kosher machine, because there's no rabbi sitting there and saying, hey, guys, you want a Slurpee? Come, here's a certification. Here's a sticker. And you're taking it out and you're drinking it. And I'm sure, tell me if this is true, you're not just getting one flavor. Come on, you guys probably mix it with all the different flavors and the shots. And the more complicated and the more, you know, lively the drink looks, the more geschmack it feels. So you're not getting only one flavor. I know how it looks. I remember from my Gersa Bianca, so, which means when I was younger, I used to, you know, live on Slurpee and Snapple and all these different things. You know, but as you get older, I try to, you know, stay away from a lot of these type of things. But anyways, so how are you able to do it? You should ask yourself this question. Anybody have an answer? Okay, I don't want to put you on the spot. Fine, I'll answer for you. You go into the store, and you walk into the 7-Eleven, and you see an array of flavors, okay? You see Coke, and you see Fanta, and you see raspberry, and blue raspberry, and some are dairy, some are pina colada, I think is dairy. It sounds a little bit, it's probably very, very dairy. There's a lot of ingredients in it. And you go into this machine, and you have no experience in the machine, and let's say you want to buy a Coke flavor, okay? So Coke is kosher, because you looked at the list of flavors beforehand to know that Coke is certified. Now, 7-Eleven has the same flavors in the machine for many months at a time. They don't switch it on a regular basis. They're always keeping the certain flavors in the machine because they have seasonal items and they have different credit with different companies that they have to service the product in the machine for a certain amount of months, and therefore they keep it in the machine. Now, if you're going to be chayshish and concerned that there's a non-kosher product in the machine, that means that, let's say this grape is non-kosher certified, it means you have to go into 7-Eleven and assume that the non-kosher flavor is in the machine underneath the kosher flavor. So it means you're pulling Coke, and you have to be concerned that maybe this grape, which is non-kosher for argument's sake, is mixed together within the Coke. It's not mixed together, because 7-Eleven, before they put that kosher flavor in there, they're cleaning the equipment out of the grape flavor, and they're putting in the kosher flavor or the Coke flavor or other flavor, because they don't want, you know, people to taste Coke with a mix of something else, because then they're going to think like a taste is a little off. So they're cleaning it out well. And you don't have to be concerned that you're the first person to come there and maybe there's some little residue left of the non-kosher flavor. So that's why the minig in Klal Yisrael, and you're not the only yeshiva that I spoke to, you know, the thousands of kids are drinking Slurpee, especially when they give it out for free on July 11th, right? That's a free Slurpee day. You probably line up a few times, right? I don't know how it works. But either way, you're going to be getting your free Slurpees, and it's very hot here. And people probably buy it more than in New York, where it's, you know, probably pretty cold. And it's very common to drink it because of the fact that the flavor is kosher, because you're looking at the sign in the machine, making sure that it's kosher certified. The syrup beforehand is not going to be in the machine, and you don't have to be concerned that you're coming right away because they're cleaning out the machine properly. That is how it works with 7-Eleven and why you're able to buy a drink at a 7-Eleven. Once we're on the topic of drinks, let's move into coffee. Okay, yes? No, it's only a 7-Eleven establishment. Once you have these off brands, you have like IC, which is also certified, not by the same rabbis that certify 7-Eleven mix, but there's IC is a certified brand of an offshoot. It's not called Slurpee, it's called something else, a slush or something. That's under the certification of the Beis Din, I believe, in Detroit. But once you get the different kinds of varieties of, I think it's Murphy's that's around here and other kinds of convenience stores, you have to find out from the person who's selling it to the store or to see what kind of brand it is and find out if it's actually certified. Many times, and if not most times, you won't have the actual symbol on the bag in the back because it's not a retail item. It's sold to a store, so they don't have a certification on something because no consumer is actually going to buy that mix. So you have to do your research, ask your rabbi, say, this is the name of the company, is it certified? You can even call the company and say, you guys have certification, and they'll say yes or no, and then you'll be able to know whether you're able to buy the non-7-Eleven Slurpee. Yeah. No, it's going to be the basic same system because, again, they don't want people to taste the different things that are going on there unless you're choshesh for a reason that there's not a cleaning process in place. You can even ask them on the spot. There's no reason for them to lie to you because they're basically, it's called like Masiach HaFituma. You're just asking if you have a cleaning process that you do beforehand where you guys want the taste to be mixed for some reason. And then based on that, you'll be able to make a decision regarding that. Now, are there any kosher certified Dunkin' Donuts around here?
Yeah.
Okay. So the question is, what about going into a non-kosher certified Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah.
What could you buy there? Anybody know?
Donuts.
Donuts. Why?
Because
No, so then let's understand how donuts are made. Okay, even though I don't eat them, but I still know how they're made. It's time to make the donuts, right? Okay, the way you make the donuts is the following. Okay, we have a company that we certify in New Windsor, New York, which you've probably never heard of, but it's a company in upstate New York. They make the donuts for 450 local Dunkin' Donuts in upstate New York. You will not have them here in Florida because the shelf life is very short. It's like a day or two. It's not like your other donuts that get, you know, a lot of preservatives in there, and they probably, you know, you don't realize a lot of products are made like months and months in advance because they have to have a long shelf life and they have to be shipped to different places. A product could be made for Pesach, for example. They're made in August, okay, or September, and it has
taste that way.
Yeah, I stay away from that as well. But they try to make it a little soft because it has to have preservatives to make it taste well. But you're dealing with fresh donuts in a factory. How is it made? So they have these mixes that are made under Ashgacha, okay. And all the Dunkin' Donuts mixes have a certification on it. But again, the facility that makes these donuts are certified by the rabbi that certifies your local Dunkin' Donuts. If you have a certification on the donut store here, that means that they're going into their Dunkin' Donuts satellite baking and making the donuts there, and the rabbi is visiting to make sure all the ingredients are fine. However, many times it could be sprinkles and what we call inclusions, like different syrups and different fillers for the donuts that may or may not be certified. So you have to make sure that that is kosher certified. Also, what else are they making in those deep fryers? Because anytime you have a deep fried product, or anything that's made in an oven and cooked and heated involved, it takes on whatever's being made. So if you put a non-kosher item in that deep fryer, a non-kosher product in that bakery oven, that's gonna have an issue of kosher. So therefore, if the rabbi is in the facility making sure that those ingredients are kosher certified, that means that he's going to that factory and verifying it. So if you have a Dunkin' Donuts store that has an Ashgacha, he's going to make sure that that factory is also certified. But it does not mean that you can buy a donut at a non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts, because they're taking the donuts, even if it's from a facility that is under Ashgacha because they're servicing 450 stores, how are they handling it? What's with the gloves, and they have the non-kosher ingredients, and there's bacon, there's other ingredients in a non-kosher store that you have to be careful about, and therefore you would not be able to purchase it at a non-kosher Dunkin' Donuts. You could buy an unflavored coffee at a non-flavored unkosher Dunkin' Donuts, you could be able to also buy a flavored coffee if you know that the certification is on the flavored. But again, if you're dealing with the shots and all the different caramels and the whipped cream and your cup of coffee is all the way high to the top because you added so many ingredients, what are all those things and the kosher status of it? You can't just assume at a non-kosher store, yeah, it's only coffee and it's whipped cream. There's animal derivatives and animal ingredients in some of that stuff. So you have to be very careful to make sure, not just assume that it's kosher certified, and not eating non-kosher has a great effect on our neshama and has a great effect on our body. You can't just take it for granted, it must be kosher certified, because why not? What could be wrong with it? Those days are over. Maybe 100 years ago, they used to go around, and you know, when things were much less simpler, and they didn't have large manufacturers and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of ingredients to get certified. But because of the fact that it's very, very difficult to get products certified, the kosher agencies are doing that, their job to make sure it's done. You have to not take things for granted and assume that it's just a very simple product. What could be wrong with it? And therefore, you have to make sure to check all those ingredients before you're taking your coffee product is fine, but now you're going to add all those inclusions. You have to make sure that all those are kosher beforehand.
Even if, like, you know that in the kosher store the same ingredients, like
so you have to really check. And there's Dunkin' Donuts is a franchise. That means that they're getting the ingredients from the same distributors, but a lot of times they have certain ingredients that they could get from other vendors as well. There's not that many of them, but those that they could get, they can go down the block and buy a certain ingredient that they may not have in the corporate level, and their distributors out. So they have permission to buy certain things. So if the store is kosher, the rabbi is going to know about it. But if the store is not kosher, it always helps them to be on their toes. Also, if they know that a rabbi is going to, you know, a regular person is going to go into the store and ask them, they're always going to keep to make sure that they know which the bottle is. I mean, I go to stores also, and I travel, like I told you before. I ask them, okay, show me the bottle. I want to get oat milk because I don't want to eat, let's say, chalav stam. So I get oat milk, and they show me the container. So the container is oat milk. It's Planet Oat. It has a OU. And it has a reputable Ashgacha on it. So then I know that that's the case. And then you usually see them using the same product in all the different stores. But something that's just not a item that they use all the time, you really should really make sure of that. And that gets us to the next question, which is not necessarily related to donuts, but it's also asking the people at the booth or the people at the game. Let's say you're going to a sports game and you want to get ice cream. Or you're going to a mall. Okay, you're going to, what's the next mall here? Aventura has a mall here. So it's a very famous, Lincoln Road, right? It's famous streets. People go shopping there. So you want to buy ice cream. Could you buy ice cream? Obviously, we're not going to get into Chol Stam, Chol Yisrael. Let's say it's kosher ice cream. But hey, there's no rabbi standing on the stand there. So you have to ask them. You go into a store and you say, hey, this ice cream is a brand, large brand name. There's no certification. You ask them to show them the tub of the ice cream, and they'll show you the tub. It'll have ashkacha on it, and it has an ashkacha on it, and you'll see the spoons and the scoopers are all cold. And just make sure that the scooper is cold, the ice cream is certified by a reputable ashkacha, and you don't have to worry about the conscience of it because you see the package and you make sure that that's kosher. Don't just assume that the brand is kosher and therefore must be kosher. Ask them the question whether you're going to a Dippin' Dots and you want to get ices, and you ask them to show you the bag. They'll show you the bag because they want to be able to make the sale. They want to sell people. And I've been to many places with my children that were going to a place that sells Dippin' Dots, and everyone's scared. I'm going to ask them on the bag. I'm going to see the OV, which is a St. Louis VOD, which is perfectly acceptable. I don't want to ask them. They're not going to show it to me. I said, I'll do it. So I go over to the guy, and I ask them to show me the bag. They said, oh, we can't show you the bag. It's in the bag. I said, listen, there's 20 people online here that could possibly give you business if all you have to do is show me the bag. And they end up showing me the bag, and they make sale of 25 guys, and they're like, wow, this is amazing. Thank you, because they don't have any problems necessarily with showing you the information. They just want to make sure that it's for a purpose. You know, they have a lot of customers that are non-Jewish buying your products also. So if you ask them for the product and you ask them for the bag, and you see the reputable ashkacha on it, just do your next step to make sure that you're eating the product, and just assume, oh yeah, the brand is kosher, and therefore it will be kosher as well. So that really takes us to the ice cream that we had. I mean, I know in different places, especially in different states, they have ice cream trucks, okay, that sell ice cream. And I've seen people with long beards and going up to the ice cream truck and buying fresh ice cream. Which does not have, I'm not talking about when you're in camp in the summer and they have ice cream truck and, you know, they charge $7 for ice cream. I'm talking about when you go into a generic ice cream truck and they pull up to a park and ice cream. And you say, what could be wrong with it? Look, they show you the container. The container is kosher. There's no way to know if that container is kosher because the container is kosher now. They showed you a kosher container. What about yesterday when they went to a non-Jewish community to have their ice cream? Did they use a kosher container for that as well? We have no way of knowing. So if you're going to an ice cream truck, you cannot buy fresh ice cream. You want to buy ice cream that's prepackaged, has an ashkacha on it. You could buy the product because, again, it has an ashkacha on it. They're not making it in the truck. And sprinkles could be non-kosher as well. Sprinkles could have animal ingredients in it. So you want to assume, oh yeah, what could be wrong with the ice cream? First of all, ice cream could have animal ingredients in it, and the sprinkles can have non-kosher as well. So you would not be able to purchase a ice cream from an ice cream truck as opposed to going to a venue of entertainment. You would be able to purchase it if you see the ingredients, the container has a certification on it. I got a question before I came here. There was some game in New York, and the kids in school, I guess I don't know if you guys know, the Nets are very popular now. They have a lot of good players. So people are frequently, you know, Barclays Center, and they wanted to know about the popcorn there. Now, popcorn also, you're going to a venue of entertainment, you're going to a game here, what is it, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Dolphins, right? The Miami Dolphins, right? So you go to Miami Dolphins, or the Heat, right, Miami Heat, you're going to a game. Even though I know a few things about Orlando Magic, right? Florida has a lot to offer in a lot of things, a lot of sports. What?
Panthers,
right. Carolina, they moved, right?
Florida Panthers.
Used to be Carolina, right?
Different football, hockey.
Oh, hockey. I play basketball still, even though I'm advanced a little bit in my age. I'm not that old, but I still like playing basketball. Hockey was never my thing. But either way, getting back to our story. So you're in the venue of entertainment, whichever it is to offer. You have a lot, football, basketball, hockey, even soccer. And you want to know if you buy popcorn. The answer is you can't buy popcorn because popcorn, even though it's not an issue of certification on the popcorn, because popcorn kernels do not need certification. Regular popcorn kernels not even kosher. But what about the oil? They'll tell you, yeah, the oil is used. Here's the OU, here's the Chafkei, whatever hashkacha you want to rely on. Here's the oil. Yeah, but what about the oil yesterday or the day before? And the popcorn is hot. So you can't buy popcorn at venue entertainment. You'll say, oh, popcorn, come on, why can't I buy the popcorn? It's just food. You know, I was pretty startled. You know what I'm saying? Like Hanukkah time, not too far long ago, and I spoke about this recently, there was people that were talking about the donuts, about how one donut place is better than the other and how the donuts taste and this donut is better than that donut. I'm like, it's only a donut. I mean, it's what are we talking about here? And in Brooklyn, okay, I'm sure all of you have heard of Brooklyn, there were people waiting online for a long time for a donut. Okay, you know what I'm saying? So you have to really realize, so if you don't have every desire in life, so you don't have a donut, you don't have a popcorn, there's plenty of things you can eat without that. You know, as it is, I'm writing a sefer on Ashi Yatzar now. I'm sure you all heard of Ashi Yatzar, right? Okay, so in that sefer, we're talking about the living to eat or eating to live. You know, what are we doing when we're eating? Just unendly taivas and desires to eat, and people eat by a kiddush, a full thing, and then they go home and they eat again, and they eat again. What is food? What do you have to think about what the value of food is, what Hashem put the... Obviously, you don't have to enjoy it, but is it taking over our lives? Is it what we are touched up, or we are talking about food a whole day, and that's what our essence is? Or no, it's not what our essence is. It's something that we do. You know, so that's something also when they deal with kashrus, is because kashrus... Things come up. Oh yeah, this restaurant is not kosher certified anymore. It used to be certified, and I can't believe it's not certified. And there's a whole backlash that this hashgacha used to give on it, and now we can't eat it anymore. And people are like, I can't believe it. How's it possible? Guys, we're talking about a piece of chicken and a piece of meat. So who cares? There's 30 other restaurants, and here there's probably 100 other restaurants you can go to. So you don't have it. You don't have every last desire. It's not the end of the world. You know, if we focus on what really matters in life. And then get a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who even gave us the ability to eat and taste all these different tastes, then we won't have any issues when we're dealing with certain kashrus, and you won't have any desire to have this flavor and this flavor of mouthwash and toothpaste and this good tasting donut which doesn't have an hashgacha, or popcorn with different flavors. A lot of desires is the root of all the issues that come up, because once you have open up your desires and food and taste this product and taste this other product, even though it's not going to be something which is reputable, it has an effect on you, and it technically can really impact your lives going forward. So I know there's a lot of questions that you probably have on your mind. I could stay for hours. I happen to have stayed in certain yeshivas for like 3-4 hours, malkas, and people don't have the ability to ask questions really on a regular basis in regards to kashrus and other things, because you know you're dealing with certain protocol and criteria and curriculum that you're dealing with in the schools. So I will answer any questions you have on topics we discussed and topics we did not discuss for the next 15 minutes, and then we'll be able to daven mincha together. So any questions that people have on topics that we spoke about, what's on your mind? Yes.
So I'm lactose intolerant, so my digestive system for dairy is not so well. So does that create an issue of separating time between milk and meat? Would I have to wait a little bit longer?
No, because I'll say you have to wait the 6 hours. You don't have to wait anything longer. It takes there's two reasons why you have to wait 6 hours. One is because basar ben shinayim, and one is because the taste of meat lingers in your mouth for up to 6 hours. So the body takes 6 hours for that to digest. And we go according to the Roiv Am, because most of the community is how that's how long it takes. There are people that are lenient in regards to 6 hours. You know, there's a discussion in the Rambam. He says k'moy shei shayis, like 6 hours. So for there, many people said that it's within the fifth hour. Some people wait 3 hours. The Ramah brings down to wait an hour. But Aruch HaShulchan says a Baal Nefesh should be machmer and wait 6 hours. And the Minhag of Klal Yisrael is to wait 6 hours. People try to cheat a little bit and say, oh, in the fifth hour, in the 5:45. And, you know, it's really very, very weak to try to, unless your family practices to wait, you know, that amount of time. But otherwise, just start making up to wait in the sixth hour without a full 6 hours is not something you should really rely on. Yes. So that's an excellent question. The question was about places that have inappropriate entertainment. The truth is, if it's a real good hashgacha, okay, I know that there's in different communities that they really should be giving a certification on the entire store. Like a lot of times they have like TVs in the restaurants and they're showing things that shouldn't be shown, or waitresses are dressed not properly. Those things should be addressed by the kosher agency, because if I'm going to a restaurant, I want to make sure that the whole experience is kosher and not be over a different other avarice because I'm sitting in the restaurant having a piece of steak or a piece of chicken. Steak is not really my thing, but maybe chicken or whatever else you guys like. Yeah.
What do you say about the non-dairy creamer?
Non-dairy creamer. So according to halacha, there's non-dairy creamers because there's non-dairy in the government, but the halacha says that it is dairy. The ingredient in there, according to halacha, is dairy, and the government feels it's non-dairy. So even though it's non-dairy creamer, it's still going to be labeled as dairy according to the kosher agencies. Yes. So it depends. If you go into a mall, let's say you want to buy a large chain of ice cream, and you see the tub and it has an hashgacha on there, so then as long as you know that the scoop is going to be used for cold, which most of these places they have cold. No, it's a machine you wouldn't be able to, because the machine, they're putting a mix into the machine. How do you know what that mix is kosher? They're showing you the box. But how do you know what the box was yesterday when they went to a non-Jewish area and they ran out of that syrup or that mix, if they're actually certified kosher or not? The truck... Ice cream machine should not be used unless you actually have an hashgacha on the truck.
If you go back a few times, but if you go back like 3 or 4 times, they still have the same container.
Wait, this what?
If you go back,
they have the same flavor.
Same container.
Okay, but then how do you know the week before they didn't have it? How do you know that the day before they had so much ice cream that in the morning there was one flavor and in the afternoon they're using... There's no way to really know. It's not. There's no hashgacha on it. And there's so many other varieties of things that you can get. It's not kedai. Also, a lot of times, the sprinkles and things like that, and the cones could be non-kosher as well. So you have to. A lot of times, I'll take the box of cones and they'll just put other cones in there. Just to, they know people are going to a kosher area. They want to be able to service everybody. Yeah. So that's an excellent question. That really brings us to our question about dairy in general. Anybody know what it means when it says in the container DE?
Dairy equipment.
Dairy equipment. But there's many hashgachas out there that do not use the dairy equipment symbol on there, and it has a D on it. And the question is, if it's really dairy equipment. Now, the way you're really able to tell is that if it says may contain wheat or soy, that means that it's probably dairy equipment, because otherwise the company is very, very careful nowadays to list it as an allergen on the product, because many people are very allergic to dairy, and if it's not on the label, that is a red flag. So that's why people will list it on the container. If it says may contain traces of dairy, that's dairy equipment as well. So even though you have a large kosher agency that uses the D symbol, many of those items from those companies and products are actually dairy equipment, and the way to really tell is by looking at that statement that says contains or may contains. As long as it doesn't say contains milk, then for the most part, that's going to be dairy equipment. And if you feel even more comfortable, you call the hashgacha that's on that product and say, hey, this is a product that says dairy on it. Is it really dairy equipment? And it applies for many things. It applies for chol stam, which means milk that's made by non-Jewish people, that there's no Jewish person living in the farm. The government has regulations to make sure that those milk is kosher, and that's why you're able to drink milk, generic milk that's not chol of Yisrael. They're relying on a Moshe Feinstein's tshuva. But if you're mekel with eating chol of stam, that's fine. But let's say people are machmer and they want to have chol of Yisrael, there are those rabbis that allow DE on products. And also, if you're waiting 6 hours from meat to dairy, you're able to have that product as well, because it's not real dairy, it's dairy equipment. Yes?
You can rely on that, but if it doesn't say anywhere on the ingredient theory, it doesn't say may contain dairy, then you could assume...
Yeah, you can assume it's dairy equipment.
It says like you look, it doesn't say anything about dairy.
There are many cereals, there are many pretzels that are really dairy equipment. After the share, we can talk about specifics of which products. Yes? Oh, so that's a very good question. It happens to be that there was certain things that were dealt with in order to decide that the hashgacha should be kept or not kept. I know that there's going back and forth to try to decide if it should be taken away, if it should remain in place. And for now, it seems that it's going to remain in place. I don't deal with that company specifically, per se, but I do know that they're going back and forth to decide if it should remain kosher or not. Right, I mean, there's a lot of different countries, like you said, it's really in America. There are other countries that the place can speak about if the heter of chol of stam applies in those countries. I know in Saudi Arabia, for example, they are very big in milking horses, okay, and that's not kosher. So you can't just assume that all the countries out there are going to be milking the cows and kosher products. They may mix camel milk, and if you're traveling to those places, you have to, again, research to make sure that the heter of a moshe with chol of stam applies to those countries as well. Yeah. When's the last time? When's the last time I ate a hot dog? Probably 20 years. For sure, 20 years.
What do you eat?
What do I eat? You got to follow me through my travels. I drink a coffee in the morning. I have cereal. I have a lot of granola bars. I'm like a chicken and potato guy. Give me a piece of chicken. Even if I go to a restaurant, a fancy restaurant, which I don't go to often, but if I go, just give me a chicken collar and a potato, and I'm done. I don't talk about food. Hashem obviously made the food, and we should enjoy it, so we enjoy it, but like, I don't talk about it so much. I try not to focus. Like a lot of these magazines, they have like the donuts are dripping out. You almost want to eat the paper, you know? Like it's so, you know, it's those type of things. It's like people become like foodies, you know? And we lose focus on what we're really supposed to do. Yes? And what? And tuna. Oh, that's a great question. Bishul Yisrael and tuna. So there's two things wrong with tuna with that. One is that you have to have a Jewish person lighting the fires by tuna, let's say, perhaps, because it's a chashuva product. Forget about the can. Regular tuna is a chashuva product, important product. You see it at smorgasbord. So a Jewish person should be lighting the fires there. Second problem is that the tuna itself, when you're catching tuna, a lot of times they'll take other products in the catch, and they may not only have tuna when you're catching it. So the rabbis rely on the fact that tuna factories only process tuna, and everything else gets thrown out on the boat. And the other thing is that tuna is in a can. So tuna is made in a can, that it's not made in like your little house pot, it's made in the retort. A retort means it goes in the can and then it gets cooked in the can. Because it gets cooked in the can, It's not something which you'll find at a smorgasbord. The caterers don't use canned tuna when they're trying to serve things at smorgasbord. So the rabbis felt it's not something which is a bishul hakam problem, and that's why the reputable hashgachas have hashgacha on the tuna fish product without requiring it to be bishul yisrael. During Pesach and Passover season, when they're making products anyway kosher for Passover, so they'll have a rabbi there, special run, special products made, where it says bishul yisrael on the can, they'll have the product made specifically, but it's not to say that the products are made all year round doesn't needs it and doesn't have it. The rabbis felt that it doesn't need it for a variety of reasons. Yes?
You said before that, like, regarding sprinkles, you said it's possible it could be non-kosher. Does that mean that any time I eat sprinkles, I'm...
No, because you're going to a store that's certified kosher. So when you're going to that store that's using the sprinkles from a factory that's certified, we have a company that makes sprinkles for a lot of large manufacturer of ice cream. We have a rabbi there. I think it's North Carolina. It's not my account, but we go in there and they make sure that those ingredients and those chemicals, whatever they're making to make those sprinkles color, taste well, are on the hashgacha, and that's why they'll use a lot of sprinkles from those factories. There are other companies as well that manufacture sprinkles, well, which have an hashgacha, so you don't have to worry about that. Yeah.
If I go to, let's say, Starbucks and I want to get a frappuccino and I look up all the syrups and everything and the whipped cream, do I have to do that every single time I go?
So there's another problem with that with Starbucks besides the actual ingredients, because Starbucks has a dishwasher, and when you deal with a dishwasher, they're adding the products that are in the store into that dishwasher. So a lot of the rabbis felt that you're mixing in utensils are made to use to make coffee, and then you're mixing that together with the non-kosher plates and other things in the store into the dishwasher. So people, rabbis felt that even the regular coffee you shouldn't have. It seems like the minhag olam and the practice is that a regular coffee you could have because it's very minimal amount of equipment that's used. You should check if you want to buy a coffee there to make sure that those ingredients are good, and the ingredients can change. So even though today it's kosher certified and you have this little whipped cream, that's fine. Maybe in 3 weeks from now they got a new vendor, or a month. You really should check on a regular basis just to make sure and not assume that it's good for many months at a time. Yeah. The regular coffee uses less amount of utensils, and a lot of times the regular coffee has a self-standing pot that's in the store, and they don't mix it together in the dishwasher, as opposed to like a lot of these other kinds of interesting names of coffee and coffee products. They'll take like little utensils and they'll mix it, and they'll use other things that make the coffee product the way they express it in the menu, and they'll mix it together with the dishwasher with other non-kosher products. Yes?
A lot of water says that it enhanced with minerals for taste. Is that there, though?
So that's an excellent question. It happens to be water does not need an hashgacha all year round. Pesach, if it says enhanced with minerals and those type of things, then it should have hashgacha on it. But generally, water is what we call a category one, which means that it's inherently kosher. There's thousands of items that could be not have issues with kosher. There's honey, there's salt, there's molasses, there's flour, there's sugar. These things don't require hashgacha because they're minimally processed. There's nothing going on with it. It's flour. It's sugar, it's salt, it's like you said, water. A lot of times people have hashgacha on Tide detergent. They have it on aluminum foil. And a lot of times the reason for that is not because it's required, it's because it's a marketing tool. They see that rabbis go into the factories and they make sure that there's checks and balances. They can't do whatever they want. So they want the symbol on the product because they feel that it's a marketing, which means that they'll increase their sales if they have this kosher symbol on the products. That's why they have things on products. They don't necessarily require it, but it has it for a variety of different reasons. Yeah. So salmon without an hashgacha is a good question, which comes up a lot. So salmon is unique because Rav Moshe Feinstein's Atzah HaTshuva, where he says the color of salmon is different than everything else. The color of salmon is pinkish. And a lot of rabbis felt that, in addition to Rav Moshe, that that's perfectly fine because salmon is unique. And that color is only for salmon. People tried to add the feed of salmon to other fish, and it didn't work. The color did not retain itself into the fish. And they felt that you could buy salmon, even though it doesn't have any skin on it, because generally we have to have fish in order to have fish that's kosher. You need skin on it to make sure that they have scales. Assuming that you know what the scales look like, it's very hard, because not even the fish that has scales on it doesn't mean that it's always kosher. There could be different kinds of scales that could not be kosher as well. But assuming that you know the fish and it has kosher scales, we have to have it on the fish. Salmon is unique because salmon has a different color. When you're dealing with cutting up the fish, if you're going to a Costco and all these larger stores, a lot of the rabbis felt that you have to really should bring your own knife because you don't know what kind of fish they're cutting before you got there, and they deal with a lot of different fish. As opposed to going to a large manufacturer and it's prepackaged and it doesn't have an hashgacha on it, but it's just salmon, a lot of times these factories only deal with salmon in a large volume, and they're not using regular knives, they're using machinery, and the volume there is tremendous, so you don't have to worry about any of those kinds of things when you're dealing with a large company. Yeah.
Lettuce. Any type of lettuce you can buy without having to check it?
So lettuce is very unique because lettuce is something which, like romaine lettuce, for example, I used to clean romaine lettuce. It was about, I think it's like $7 for a cup full of lettuce. So I stopped buying the regular lettuce. Now, one thing you'll find by lettuce is that even though it has an ashgacha on the lettuce, it's not going to get you down to zero. Chazal say you have to check products. You have to check lettuce, and it's more strict for you to eat one bug than it is to eat a non-kosher sandwich. So you have to be very careful with that. So when Chazal say you have to check, you have to really check to make sure. So these companies, they pre-wash their lettuce, and they're not guaranteeing that you won't find it. They're just bringing it down to below 1% 10% chance of finding a bug. So because they're bringing it down below the 10%, that's why they're selling it to you with ashkacha, because once it's below 10%, you don't have a chia bedika, you don't have an obligation to check on it. But again, if you want to buy the regular brand of lettuce at a store, and romaine lettuce, you have to wash it, because those things have a 10% chance of finding a bug in it, and therefore the books and the kosher books and a lot of different other washing books from other ashkachas and agencies tell you how to wash the product properly to make sure that you're bringing it down below 10%, but you'll never get it down to zero unless you're buying like vertical farming or greenhouses. Many times could be very, very low level of bugs.
Why don't we see Dover Shane's copy? It's not a sick ratio, so I should be able to eat a lettuce.
No, because technically you're not able to eat something if you know that's really like a Hilcha Shabbos kind of thing, as far as like if you know it exists, because it's 1 in 10% chance.
So 9 out of 10 leaves aren't going
to
have a bug.
Right, because I'll say that because it's a 10% chance you're finding it, there's a still obligation on you to check it to make sure that it still has it, even though you're not going to. That's why you have a whole thing with Dover Shane Miskaven and then Dover Shane Miskaven, which is beyond the scope of this year, about when the factories are mevatel different things at different levels because they're not having intention to mevatel it. That's when that comes up a little bit. But in regards to lettuce, Chazal say you have a chiyah bedika to check, so therefore the companies are making it less than a 10% chance of finding it, and that's why they're able to sell the products as is.
Why wasn't there a chiyah bedika when I was 15 years old? Like, Rav Moshe ate lettuce.
That's an excellent question. It happens to be that there was something that they called DDT. DDT was basically a pesticide that they put in the fields that killed everything. Even they killed the bugs, and what else did they kill? Anybody know?
Songbirds.
No, not songbirds. That's right. There's a book about that.
Rachel Carson.
Right. There's Simon a book about how. Right. Exactly. It killed the birds and it killed people. Okay. It was killing people also. So because it was killing everything.
No, it didn't kill a single person. It's a liberal mind.
Right. Okay. Okay.
It was a liberal mind. It didn't kill anybody.
Okay, but I guess it got people sick, probably. And
no, she claimed it caused cancer. The liberals bought into it. More people have died of malaria because of absence of DDT.
Right. So it was very. I think I read most of the book, but it was very fascinating at the time. I probably forgot certain variables. But either way, that's what happened years ago when they used to not clean the produce so well. Is because they there was things that were pesticides were killing it and then became unhealthy, so they got rid of the pesticides, and that's when a lot of the new products became more infested, and that's when in the 80s perhaps, maybe even earlier, that before my days, I guess, when it got more of a problem, and that's when they started with the clean produce and then selling things on the market like that. Okay, I want to thank everybody for coming. Appreciate everyone learning, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.